Welcome to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. You are listening to an expert talk from November 2018. Mr. Christian Lott, Director, Hydra Marine Sciences GmbH presents Diving into Plastic.
Welcome to Dive into Plastic. Actually, I'm a marine biologist, and I want to rush you through the last years of my personal development, becoming from a marine biologist, which is what you what we are supposed to do, dealing with animals like sharks and whales and dolphins and turtles, or with bacteria, and teaching also people in our marine field station on the island of Elba in Italy. We have a worldwide network, and we have been doing wildlife documentaries for TV stations all over the planet. We do marine biology courses on site, teaching young people about the oceans. We do high school classes and education for kids in our program School on the Beach. And we do underwater research. So diving for a better knowledge of the largest part of our planet, which are the oceans. We also dive in lakes, like in high alpine lakes, studying bacteria that have evolved almost 3.5 billion of years ago, or finding in explorative expeditions springs of life in the Dead Sea. We also have sometimes the chance to go down in the abyss of the oceans with submersibles studying deep sea volcanoes, or we bring the laboratory into the ocean to decipher the miracles and the secrets of bacteria that are all over the planet and have a big impact on us and the ecosystems. So our business, being on a fair, our business is water. And if you see planet Earth from the Pacific side, you see that actually it should not be called Earth, but water. Because more than two-thirds of the planet is covered by the oceans. Since about 10 years, we have a new emerging research focus, which is plastic in the marine environment. First thing we wanted to know is, where is all the plastic? And everywhere we go, we find plastic. Look around when you come here, when you go home tonight, when you go to the canteen, plastic is everywhere, but it's also ended up already in the environment. Here in Venice, in a harbor, and on an Italian island where we mostly live, in a national park in absolutely protected waters, at my sister's home in Nuremberg, just a couple of hundreds of kilometers from here, a bird's nest, or at a rocky shore, an old fishing rope, microplastics washed ashore in the sand. Next time you go to a beach, look under your feet, look between your toes, and I'm pretty sure you will find plastic. Here we go to the other side of the planet in Indonesia, where we have been working the last 2.5 years in the Coral Triangle, the hotspot of marine biodiversity, and also the hotspot of marine plastic. Also, if you go to the fish market, we find, unfortunately, fished one of the most iconic fishes some of you have heard. It's a living fossil. We know this animal since 35 million years, fossilized, and it has been found alive in the deep sea canyons around Manado in Indonesia. And this is how it looks where the ferry departs to one of the most iconic diving sites of the world. Maybe some of you are divers and have heard of Bunaken Island. But also in the remote places, in the Arctic, in the Antarctic, our colleagues keep on finding plastic in ice cores or sending us images from deep sea going robots that at 2, 3, 4, 5 kilometers, even at the deepest point in the Mariana Trench, find plastic. So it's a mess. Unfortunately, this was made us becoming, from marine biologists, plastic biologists. And this is one of the most drastic examples. Some of you might have seen this. This is from a spot in Honduras. Our friends going out with a boat and finding a highway of plastic debris floating along the coast in the clear blue waters of the Caribbean. And here's this, the director of the marine park. And they just found this going diving. This is very, very, very extreme.
One, two, three.
And it's a bit crazy too. So you see this is all plastic, mainly styrofoam. So what do we know? We know plastic is everywhere. Plastic is everywhere we look in the environment, snow, ice, rainwater, in rivers, in lakes, in the ocean, but also in the soil, in your garden, in your compost, and also in the air we breathe. And often, as you have seen, it's very extreme. But still, we have a large gap of knowledge. We don't know where 99% of all the plastic that we have been producing since the 1950s is really stored. Where has it ended up? We know it's down there somewhere, but we don't know. The mass balance is not complete yet, and the final sink might be the seafloor. We have some terminology around, and you will hear other talks about that. We have macroplastic that you can physically see, and we brought you a range of stuff here. You're welcome to come over here. It's all debris. Most of it is debris from the ocean we collected in the last couple of months. But we have also microplastic. This is a photograph of a beach, of one of the nicest beaches on Elba Island. And after a storm, it was all washed up. A lot is plant material, but all in between there's microplastic. And also underwater. It's really a soup. Microplastic has been defined as smaller than 5 millimeters. And we also make a distinction between primary microplastics, which are made to be used as particles, as in cosmetics, shower gel, toothpaste, and so on. But also it's used for cleansing, as for blasting instead of sand. And you will find it also here in the hall, microplastics as raw material to make other items out of plastic, the pellets. And then we have secondary microplastics, which comes from fragmentation. And you find this also on the beaches. This is not unusual. This is not an extreme example. You have beaches that are covered by sand. You have beaches that consist more of plastic than from sand. And also, of course, you have this fragmentation by cutting, by working on plastic. If it's close to the shore, it will end up in the water. In the environment, macroplastic will fragment to flakes, to microfibers, to small particles. This is styrofoam on a beach. It's not snow. But is plastic in the ocean a new topic? It's actually not. With 50 years almost of observation of plastic in the environment. This is the Caribbean coast, and there have been found 5,000 pieces per square kilometers of plastic in 74. In a recent study, we have found the 40-fold increase of plastic particles at the surface in this area. But interesting enough, we have a gap. The red arrow shows the development of the plastic consumption, and the green one shows what we find in the ocean as density most of the time. So is there less entering the ocean, although we consume more? No, it's exported from the surface in a constant flow in the rain down to the sea bottom. We find it in all the course our colleagues are taking in the deep sea, down to 4.5 kilometers deep. We find it in sediment. We find it on the seafloor, and there also we find the increase. In 10 years, we have an increase in pieces found by video observation of 2 times. And the thing is, it's out of sight, because under the surface, you rarely can see. Getting back again to Indonesia, this is one of the nicest places, and it was termed by CNN one of the 5 best dive sites or 4 best dive sites in Asia. It's Bunaken Island. But sometimes it looks like that, with diving in a plastic soup, depending on the current. And the seafloor is covered with that stuff. This is quite a complicated graph, but it doesn't reflect. I want to show you that about 12 to 15 million tons of plastic are entering the ocean, and most of it is going to the seafloor. 94%, 1% only is staying at the surface. So what you see actually at the beaches is maybe a 4% share, and all the rest is gone. And here are some interesting things also for this fair. Also, textiles and raw material pellets contribute to this amount. So what does it mean? Where does it come from? And we have mismanaged waste. This is a graph which in orange shows you the production, and in red shows you the share of plastic waste that is not managed, which is landing in the environment. So we can again see that in the States and in Europe we produce quite a lot, but also in China and Japan we produce a lot, and especially China and Southeast Asia do not keep track with the waste management system that much as the development is going. So we have a lot of mismanaged waste, which leads to a lot of input. The bigger the dot, the higher the input of rivers to the sea. The 10 biggest, dirtiest rivers in the world export about 90% of all the plastic stuff which we find in the oceans. And it's all distributed by a set of currents which also form these gyres, accumulating the stuff which then sinks down to the ocean. This is again a nice but very complicated graph. I just wanted to point you out on the top, these round dots. These are the pathways. So we have the waterways, we have the direct input, and we have wastewater. So what is going down the toilet in parts ends up also in the waterways in terms of particulate matter. And here again, you have a number, about 12 million tons enter the ocean every year. Again, where is it? This is what we have produced, about 90 million tons since the 50s, which was then introduced into the ocean. And we have about that 1/3 in the coastal area, 1/3 in the open water, sinking down, and 1/3 on the seafloor. And just this tiny bit is floating. Keep this in mind when you think about ocean cleanup and other measures to try to fish the stuff that's already out there back again. It's a huge effort for a very little amount we have to track down. So we know that plastic in the ocean is massively increasing. Plastic at the surface is about 1%, and the plastic at the beaches and the seafloor we see on a daily basis almost increasing. We still do not know the exact transport pathways. The wastewater and the contribution of accidental loss at the coastlines and at the communities. And also what is in the midwater system of the oceans. It's a huge space which is largely unexplored and very dynamic. Is there plastic in organisms? Yes, there is. Already almost 50 years ago, they started to see that in fish from the English Channel, but also in New England, part of the fish we took out were already full of plastic. They had plastic in their guts. And this is one of the most iconic animals, a sperm whale, largest predator on Earth, chewing on an old bucket. And we find more and more animals dead on the beaches, and if you open them up, they're full with plastic. It locks their stomach, and they cannot eat anymore because their stomach is already full of inert plastic. This is what you find. And if you look in a big shark, if you look in a big tuna, if you look in turtles, if you look in seabirds, it's all the same. We're stuffing our animals, our marine animals, with plastic. They don't know the difference. And also the tiny stuff that's breathing for us, the plankton. These organisms are in a big soup of algae normally, and they do not eat algae, but instead they eat microplastic. And seafood is a big contributor for protein for human nutrition consumption. So 1/6 of all protein is coming from seafood. And we might ask ourselves, is there plastic in the food web? Is there plastic in our food? We fish the shrimp. The shrimp has eaten microplastic, and it's ending up on our plate. Do we also eat the plastic? So we know that many hundred animal species are directly or indirectly affected by plastic. They take it up, and some groups are really threatened. Some bird populations might crash because the adults bring the stuff to their chicks. Think of the albatross. An albatross is going all around Antarctica to feed, and it's coming back some weeks later to its chick, eating up all the plastic it finds on the way. And the long-term effect on populations is not known yet. Also, what toxic substances might accumulate in the organisms, in us, and in the food web. So being more technical, what is out there? If you look at the polymer composition of what is at the surface, this is a study from the Mediterranean, you find the usual polymers you also have here as your raw material, and which is the main contributor to plastic production in the world. So it's polyethylene, polypropylene, polyamide, polystyrene, PVC, and some others, and you also find them, of course, in the floating debris. If we include the fibers and do not take them out of the study, just look at the table on your right, you see that rayon, polyester, and polyamide make the biggest share. And we wonder, wow. And 30% of the fibers we find have a cellulose signature in the analysis we normally perform. And you saw maybe this news a week ago that cellulosic dominate deep-sea textile microfibers, what we find along the European shores from Portugal to the Black Sea all through the Mediterranean. And this was a bit weird because cellulose is thought to be biodegradable. Just read the red stuff. There are several, this is the original publication, and I was just attending a meeting 8 days ago, where they presented this when I got the news flash. And most of the fibers they found were essentially not plastic, but cellulose. And they were of not natural origin because they were dyed. And we don't understand what's really going on. And we think there's kind of a cellulose enigma in environmental sciences now. It should be biodegrade, but we don't know what happens. And this is not the first time. French group in 2015 also said viscose is present. Some colleagues from Denmark and the UK in 2013 said semi-synthetic cellulosic materials like rayon were most common. And we have a suspicion that the dyeing and the other treatments might alter the inherent biodegradability of cellulosic fibers. We don't know yet what is happening, and I'm open for your suggestions to study this. If you go to macroplastics, you want to know what's in the sea. And some colleagues from Bremerhaven did a very great job in compiling all the literature that is available. And we see that most of the stuff we find in the oceans is plastic again. 2/3 are plastics. And if you put all the plastic together, as 100%, we have material-specific sectors that we can identify. It's only one product. It's styrofoam, which makes 3% of all the surface trash, and fisheries, 15% of all the plastic we find in the sea. So ropes and nets, basically made from a very few materials. If you take it together to the surface, so we are material-specific and habitat-specific, we have 6% of only one substance, and you saw where the diver was jumping into the water. This was all, most of it was styrofoam. If you look at the seafloor, more than one-third is made up of fishery gear. And sometimes it leads to that. You find a turtle on the beach that had been conserved and almost looks like a horrible artwork. But this is what you very often find at the most pristine beaches, where no one goes to clean it up. If you go to a hotel beach in the tropics, it's cleaned up every morning with a big effort. But this is the beach just around the corner of one of the nicest places I've ever been. So what do we find in the litter? There are basically 10 most common items you all know. There's cigarette butts, food wraps, plastic bottles, plastic caps, grocery bags, and so on, straw stirrers, plastic lids, and foam from takeout articles. These are all single items, single-use items. And what we know, we find the polymers in a similar share, similar proportion as in the production. And most marine macroplastics are single-use items, and cellulosic fibers are at a high share. And the question is, how comes? What does make it so difficult for cellulose that is treated to be degraded? Talking about single-use items, what can we do? Should they be replaced, as we are now talking? Maybe. Should they be replaced with biodegradable plastics or as a wood fork, better than a plastic fork at your fast food shop? Is it better in a life cycle assessment? Or should it be banned? Should there be a heavy regulation? How does it get there? We have to look at this and touch your own nose. I don't know if you say this in English, but in German would make much sense. So we are the ones who litter. This is yesterday in front of our hotel. So in the night, someone went there, had his fast food, and just threw the stuff out. It's mainly paper, but still, it's the behavior that makes the litter. Then we also have loss by accident. So you lose your gear as a fisherman. You lose stuff blown away from your ship or from the coast. But we also have a topic that it's very important for here, the intrinsic loss, so you cannot avoid, which is, for instance, abrasion of tires and of textiles. We lose about 6 million tons of tire rubber each year, with an overall production of plastics of 300 tons. So this is about 2% of all the plastic, which is just shed to small spot particles and distributed into the environment. And by the way, we don't know where the stuff is. In Germany alone, there are 100,000 tons of rubber tire abrasion each year. And you all know we're in Munich. This is the Allianz Arena. You could fill the Allianz Arena with the rubber produced in Germany just from tires in 2 years, completely. Fill it up with dust, black dust from tires. Look at your shoes. Look at my shoes. Where's the stuff going? And we brought you some stuff. These are my flip-flops, marine biologists' original flip-flops worn for 2.5 years. Where's the stuff? Where's this gone? Fleece jacket, 22 years of wearing. Where's it gone? Many, many expeditions, so I don't want to throw it out, and it still keeps warm. Fibers from textiles to enter the ocean are estimated to 190,000 each year, tons. Some say even 300,000 each year. What can we do about it? And there's general wisdom. Everyone knows by now who wants to know. We should reduce, we should reuse, we should recycle. But who does the first? Who is the first to start? We all want it, but who wants to have a change? We all want to have a change, but who wants to make a change? Maybe. How should I do? We also could start earlier. Refuse. Look on your behavior each day. And I'm not very brave. I just started and I forced myself to bring this can every day and not use a cup of plastic each time I have to drink. And we should redesign. We should redesign and we should rethink our behavior. We have been using for 60 years plastics, which is fantastic material. Our life depends on that. But we are also trained in 60 years of behavior, how we use, how we approach this plastic. And the plastic itself is not the problem. It is our interaction, our approach to plastic that makes plastic a problem. We should not feel guilty for the plastic. We should feel guilty for our approach and our behavior if we want. And it's not really thought to the end. Can any one of you textile experts, I'm challenging you now, telling me what is the sustainable, full circular solution for my old fleece jacket? Is there any? Did we think it through yet? And we have other problems. We have management problems every day. This was the metro station. After I found this on the parking lot, I had another situation. People are just careless, and the community workers cannot do this, clean this every day, or I don't know. It's just there. Today it was clean, as we just passed. But also my behavior, a cup of tea in a good German Bavarian restaurant, tea with milk, it's all plastic. The tea bag is made from plastic, envelope to keep it fresh, the milk. What are the alternatives? Can we make a change? We have to rethink our interaction with plastic. Up to now, our approach is mostly linear. And it's a concept of production and consumption, which has, as the term already says, an end-of-life option. It should not be an end-of-life. It should be towards rebirthing of all we do, all we use. We should rethink towards circularity. Imagine ourselves on a spaceship with very, very limited resources. This is, in fact, what we are. We are now more than 7 billion people on a very tiny planet somewhere out in the cold. And maybe it's an option to go to Mars. But have you ever been in a very, very cold desert? This is how Mars will be. So you have to create everything around you, like on a spaceship. And the only way, if you want to make a change, is to think in circles, circularity. Many of you are engineers. Many of you are very technical. And you say, well, this is impossible. It's really an impossible mission. And I don't want to run the video, but you know this, that a crazy guy told his nerd colleagues that have been, this is the PlayStation generation, why do we throw rockets away after we launch a satellite into orbit? Why don't we reuse them? And everyone said, it's crazy, it's not gonna work. It is not gonna work. And after some years of trying, these computer kids landed a used rocket backwards on a platform in the ocean. Check it on YouTube. It's, for me, it's one of the most incredible things I've seen in the last years. We can do it. But we have to step beyond what is possible. We have to take risks. And I think for us also, it's worth. There are alternatives, and you see it here if you look around. This was the last day when I came from Italy in the supermarket. Zero microplastics in our cosmetics under our own brands in this big supermarket chain in Italy. Some of you are Italians, they will know. They make a change. They say, no, we don't want it anymore. Put something else in. If you need abrasives, if you need cleansing for your face, put something else in that is environmentally sound and it is not introducing on purpose plastic to the environment. or around here. You have these approaches, and many of you start thinking sustainably. They recycle marine trash or industrial waste to new products. But what is still missing, and I'm not blaming this company, I don't even know who it is, it stops here. We have to go back here. We have to fill this gap. The same. Regenerate. That's great. But what's happening then, if this is really worn out? 93% recycled fibers. This is a bit shaky. But plastics are forever. And there is this, the thinking is in this. And we have to bring it back to full circle. Wow. Same, you've seen this. And many of you are behind these booths now. And you make a big change already, and you know it. In industry, this is new. And so on. It was just yesterday. Here again, it's perfect. This is for ecology classes in high school. But what is behind it? Do we fulfill this? Can we do it? And this is great that people think, start thinking. But for clothes and shoes, is there already a truly circular model? Does it exist? I don't know. In this respect, I'm a consumer. I'm a marine biologist. I can tell you about bacteria and whales and sharks and corals, but not about your business. I'm just asking you, and I'm challenging you in a good way. I want to know, do we still have a circular model for that? And now I wanted to make a bit of an excursion into the bioplastics world, which brought us into the plastics world. Are bioplastics really an alternative? Can we use them? And if I'm talking about what we're doing, we are often asked, yeah, but do you really mean biodegradable or just fragmenting? No. We talk about the complete conversion of the polymer into carbon dioxide or methane, water, and biomass by the action of microbes. So bacteria and fungi eat up the stuff completely. But there's also a bit of a confusion about the term. What is bioplastics? And the terminology is ambiguous. For that, I want to run you, because I've been in this discussion also with some of you, and I decided to put it in. It's a bit complicated. If you have time, it's not complicated, but now I will run you through. So you have two feedstock possibilities. Either it's bio-based or it's petroleum, fossil-based. And the fate of the plastic can also be distinguished either being non-biodegradable or biodegradable. And with these four terms, you can play now. Conventional plastic is traditionally made from petroleum, like PE, PP, PET, you know it. There's also the possibility to make the same polymers from biological raw materials. You can make PE or PET from olive oil or from cane sugar. But still, they have the same properties, but still they are not biodegradable. They are bio, but not biodegradable. So they are bio-based, non-biodegradables. And they are also fossil-based. With chemistry, you can do it. Fossil-based plastics that are biodegradable. For us, in the terminology, true bioplastics are bio-based and biodegradable. But attention on details. Polylactic acid is compostable in industrial compost and hardly degradable, for instance, in the natural environment. It's very hard to degrade. And this is what's our core job. Does the stuff really degrade in the natural environment? And for that, we need coordinated laboratory mesocosmic in situ tests to really prove this. If you want more information, scan the code, which is also at the end of the talk. The claim biodegradable should be taken with caution, and it should be specified under which condition. It depends if you put it on your home compost or you throw it in the deep sea where it's cold and no oxygen available for a long time. It should be proven in an international acknowledged standardized system by independent labs should be certified and carefully communicated to prevent unwanted consumer behavior. So some people think that if you put on a plastic bag, it's biodegradable. The consumer is more ready to throw it out and to litter. And in some countries, it's already forbidden to claim this on consumer articles. And then we have the single-use items. Is it really an alternative to use biodegradable plastics? Is a plastic fork or a plate or a cup in a fast food restaurant? Is it meaningful to have this from biodegradable plastic, or should we avoid it at all? Or is the whole concept not suitable in this respect? And also in durable items, should they be from bio-based, biodegradable properties? But also, the other segment I wanted to point out is the intrinsic loss. Cigarette butts are intrinsically lost by behavior. All smokers know this, that even if you're very careful, once in a time you just check out your cigarette butt into the environment, and people do it on a regular basis. Or the abrasion, wear and tear situation, or fishing gear. Can this make a difference if you put these things under a biodegradability? Sponges, our shoes. What are the measures? First measure is awareness, over and over and over and over again to anyone, your colleagues, your kids, your boss, everyone, every time you can. Say it's not that wise to do it this way because it's going to be lost in the environment. And also waste management. It's a huge effort to treat it well. One of the richest countries in the world and still in the EU, the UK is still putting to landfills 65% to 70% of all their plastic waste. So it has to be thought over again and again. Think whatever you want, but think, please. Rethink every time you encounter plastic in your daily life. On business level, rethink your value chain. It's not impossible because it's too much. Maybe it's a gain in image, in motivation of your internal and your external partners. As a producer, as a buyer, as a supplier, you can make a difference. It is a risk also. I'm aware of that. And we're facing this risk in our business environment also every day. We clothe, and as a divers, we are completely wrapped in plastic and in rubber, of course. Also, policymakers are asking, what could you do? Rethink your values. What do you really want to achieve? Do you want to achieve the next election? Or do you think for the next generation? You have to rethink your governance model as a regulator. Should I ban this or should I cooperate? Force cooperation with industry and other stakeholders? And we can redesign, and I'm sure we can. It will be complicated, it will be risky, it will be unthought yet, but we will achieve it if you really want it. So rethink, restructure, and redesign towards a circular economy at all means, and start now. Or I think others will do it for you. Colleagues will do it, competitors will do it, clients will do it, or regulatory bodies will do it. And sooner or later, your old-fashioned business will be outdated. It's worth it. I'm absolutely convinced it's worth it, and I'm very positive that we can make it, but we have to start. And please let me be a marine biologist again. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? The question is whether that I said in some countries it's forbidden on consumer articles to claim biodegradability or to claim that a product is biodegradable. Which countries wear this? It's changing. And there's a big movement now in the EU. And I know that for shopping bags, for instance, in Belgium, it's the case. And also, I think in California, in the state of California. But this is detailed information. You easily can look it up. But it's there. And people think we want biodegradable shopping bags. That's the law in Italy now and in France. But you should not put it on as a label, as they say in Belgium. In Italy and in France, you find it, and it's a strong marketing thing still. Other questions?
I was wondering about the enigma of the cellulosic fibers that are not degrading. And I was wondering if it was because of a change in the bacteria environment. So you might have seen a change as you are a biologist in that area.
Yeah. We think that we don't know. My gut feeling is, and I was talking because we are also quite new in that, and all marine biologists that deal with it are struggling with the different degradation steps of the polymer in the ocean. And sometimes it's not matched by the analytical instruments. The analytical instruments are made for material analysis, and the instruments know the raw material. They know a pristine polypropylene. But if a propylene was in the environment already for some years under UV light, it changed also the chemical signature a little bit, and this is sometimes not covered with the instruments. And coming back to your question from the fibers, yes, I can think that some of the fibers changing the polymer structure at the outside, and some of the dyes we know, especially the older dyes, are toxic. Some of them have been forbidden since years now, but in some countries they are still used. And also old dyes, like the aniline dyes or indigo or something, they are toxic to microbes. They're antibacterial. Or the coating, the finishing might be antibacterial. So if you put an antibacterial on your fiber, the bacteria cannot attack it. We don't know. This is very hot. And we're just starting to understand that we maybe in technology, in industry, especially in industry that is aware, and in environmental science, we missed something, obviously. There's a huge amount of cellulosic fibers out there. And I asked also, we have been to this big conference last week in Lanzarote. We asked the colleagues, but wasn't it just your lab coat from cotton? I said, no, they were all dyed, colored fibers, blue, red, green. And in the early times also of this analysis, there was a lot of contamination in the laboratory because we have all the clothes and you go there. I mean, I had always these red fibers in my petri dishes when I was studying my small animals, my worms under the microscope. And I knew where it came from. But since then, since they recognized this, they work in an absolutely clean lab. And they only wear white cotton clothes. And they have controls and all that. So the results are true. We'll see. Okay. Thank you very much for your attention. If you have any questions, there's also Miriam, my colleague. And please check what we brought from the sea directly to here. It's all fresh plastic, marine plastic. Check it out or see what we found in our garden and have a discussion. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other expert talks, go to www.performancedays.com. Copyright November 2018 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.